Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
We the ones that be winning every year, even though we on an 8-8 drought. We the ones with the big stadium, got the big screen, big as your house. Either love us or the haters, they gon' talk about it, that'll never be no doubt. Cause we them Cowboys, we them Dallas Cowboys. We the ones with the owner that got more swag than most your team. We the ones they wanna play with when they go pro, that's most they dreams. Either love us or the haters, they gon' talk about us, that'll always be a guarantee. Cause we them Cowboys, we them Dallas Cowboys. Yeah, yeah. Man, they be like Romo this and Romo that.
Hey, Cowboys fans, hope you're having a great summer so far. Maybe you're on the beach listening to us. Maybe you're just driving to work. Either way, we'll get you through it here with some Cowboys discussion. Great show today. Great panel for you here. I'm Kent producing, joined by three of the best when it comes to breaking down the Dallas Cowboys via podcast. From The Athletic, he's been at the Star watching these Cowboys. It's Father John Machota, at John Machota on Twitter. And back, I should say, from the Stars beat, Saad Youssef. What a great run that ended. We'll get all his thoughts on that. And of course, from the Freak, from the Speakeasy, listen to him in the mornings in the DFW area. It's your host, Kevin KT Fun Summer Turner. Hey, KT.
Hello, Kent. Yeah, let's turn up here. End of May. We are 100 days away as we record this, 100 days away from NFL opening night.
Wow.
I believe we're 66 days away from the first preseason game because everyone loves the Hall of Fame game. And if my math's off a little bit, I apologize, but I think we're close to that, and that's the point. Now, Saad, you covered the Stars real good for us. It was a good playoff run, man. But you needed 16 wins, and 10 is just not going to get it done in the playoffs. We needed 16. We needed six more, both games and goals.
Yeah.
What the heck?
Yeah,
happened?
It was tough. But you know, like, to be honest with you, like, you know, just to make this more relevant to this audience, I think in, first of all, it was a great run, you know, whether you're a hockey fan or not. It was just a lot of fun. And this team, I wrote about it before the playoffs began. Like, this team is a lot of fun. And I mean that from like an aesthetically pleasing style of hockey. Like, if you watch the Stars make the same run in 2020, they went all the way to the Stanley Cup final. They played a boring style of hockey and stuff, but this is different. So that's one thing. The second thing is, I think this was a great time for the Stars to go on this run. Mavericks missed the playoffs. The Cowboys have a very low drama, you know, off season. Like, there's no daughters coming out of the woodworks. There's no you know, controversial draft pick or anything like that. I feel like yeah, the Rangers are playing well, but it's baseball season in May and April right now. So I think this was a really good time because I'll tell you, at Stars games, there was a lot more. During the season, the crowd is decked out in Stars gear. During the playoffs, there was a lot more Cowboys jerseys, Mavericks jerseys, because like, you know, a lot of new fans who are getting to watch the Stars for the first time or whatever. And honestly, like, you could see that a little bit because, you know, fans cross over like that where, you know, they'll wear one team's jersey to another team's game. It's Dallas. But I saw a lot of Cowboys hats, a lot of Cowboys jerseys. And I think, you know, in general, it was good for all that.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, it was fun, right? We all enjoy it. And to get to the Final Four, that's cool. Better to make the playoffs than not make the playoffs, Mavericks. Rangers have, like, their best start in franchise history. And we sit here with the Cowboys team who, like, it does feel like they're kind of close, like, maybe. But I think if you asked a Cowboys fan on the street, John, hey, what's your confidence of this team getting it done in January? I don't know that they would, like, give you, like, great vibes now just because there's just a put-up-or-shut-up type mode happening. Now, John's been covering rookie OTAs. We had the schedule release. This is more of kind of a month of May recap. We took our foot off the gas for a little bit. You've been around the team for a little bit, John. How are things feeling now? Mike McCarthy's head honcho, both hands on the wheel of the ship, it seems.
All right. First take I got here. Watching that Stars run just had me thinking about, can you just imagine if Dak like just committed some stupid penalty within the first few minutes of the wild card round? Cooper Rush comes in, leads them to victory. Dak is also suspended the next game. Cooper Rush leads them to the NFC Championship game, which they haven't been since 1995. Dak is able to come back for the NFC Championship game. Cowboys are the favorites. They get their doors blown off. Like, just how nauseating that entire offseason would be. Like, the whole, like, if you're a Cowboys fan, you don't know what I'm talking about. Like, so Jamie Benn is the captain of the Stars, committed a stupid penalty, you know, missed a couple games, and they played some of their best games without him. But it would be so wild if that happened from a Cowboys perspective, just because they haven't been able to get to the NFC Championship game. And if they finally did, and Cooper Rush is the one that led them there, and then Dak comes back and everyone's like, here we go. It's finally going to happen. And then they get their doors blown off. This entire offseason would not only be nauseating from a Cowboys fan standpoint, it would be one of the biggest stories in all of sports.
Yeah, no, I agree. No, it's like, I don't know who it can't be Dak, right? It can't be Dak, but like, what is the other player on the Cowboys team that's the equivalent of Jamie?
What if Dak threw like multiple interceptions in that game?
I feel like it has to be Dak because it's the captain. And then the fact of it works with Dak too, because they won without Jamie Benn. And there are Cowboys fans that obviously saw the Cowboys win without Dak last year with Cooper Rush. That's why I'm saying that you can get that same exact thing where people would be like, well, maybe they are better off with Rush.
Yeah. And I agree with that. And I also agree with that because another thing is that Jamie Benn's not their best player and Dak is not the Cowboys' best player, right? Like, you have Micah Parsons and, you know, there's other young guys who you would consider as a better overall player. You know, in a vacuum, Dak is up there. Jamie Benn is up there. He's one of their better players, but he's not Miro Heiskanen, like, best player, the same way that, you know, Micah Parsons is considered the best player in Dallas. So I agree. I think it's a pretty good comparison. And that would be just the craziest offseason in the world if that ever happened.
I know we're coming off a bad season with Dak, but a lot of the lists are getting put out now, you know, best quarterbacks in the league going into the season. A lot of love for Dak right now on Twitter. A lot of film getting put out there like, hey, I know there's some negativity around Dak, but like there's a huge discrepancy between the people that watch tape and the fans on Dak.
Well, yeah, and then the other thing that helps is that, you know, with Rodgers leaving, you just look across the landscape of the NFC and you can put him in that conversation with whoever is the best quarterback in the entire conference. And if you have the best quarterback or one of the best quarterbacks in the conference, then you got a good chance of making a run in January. And certainly that's where it fits with him. But yeah, I mean, his interception number, you know, having the 15, the career high, leading the league last year, that one isn't as alarming to me as just like the way he played in late in that game against San Francisco, where they were still in the game and some of the mistakes he made there. I think those are of bigger concern, but I will say, you know, KT asked about, you know, being at OTAs and that, and, you know, we got a chance to talk to Dak. So this was last Thursday, and it was interesting how defensive he got about when he was asked specifically about Mike McCarthy saying that him and Dak have went back and watched all of his interceptions. It's just very clear Dak does not want to talk about these interceptions anymore. And he's not the type of guy that's going to throw his like teammates under the bus. I'm like, well, let's break all 15 down and we can point the blame. He's never going to do that. So he just has to wear it. It's a stat that the quarterbacks have to wear. But I mean, that's like the biggest thing that when you go into this season with Mike McCarthy now calling plays, you have to eliminate those, at least get them reduced. And to be fair, it's not like this has been an issue in Dak's career before, but my big thing is, as I go into OTAs, I think, and as most people that follow the Cowboys, it's kind of like, well, what is McCarthy going to do to help, you know, be better and help Dak to be better? And so, you know, you're not getting a ton out of OTAs watching this. They're doing 7-on-7s, a lot of individual things in that. But the one thing, like, when you take away from what Dak had talked about with the offense and that, you know, he mentioned about how quick the guys are and how clean the guys have been early in OTAs with, hey, if the first and second read aren't there, getting out of it and getting to the scramble drill rules. And I think that's interesting because talking to people that know the West Coast offense, they have mentioned the fact of how what this could be is a lot less options for Dak. It's this isn't there, go to this. If that's not there, then we break off and we go. There's not, you know, you're not trying to get your fourth, fifth option. You know, it's trying to make it more comfortable for him. But we just won't know for sure until we actually like see this go on. Probably not even until week one, because it's not like he's going to play in the preseason games and you're only going to get so much out of training camp. And it's still up in the air right now if they're going to practice against another team. That would be nice to see. They haven't ruled it out, but they haven't. There's nothing set in stone yet either.
I think with Dak's things, like it's also, you know, you can't just go back and watch the interceptions alone because, for example, you go back to that Jacksonville game in overtime. You know, I don't really have a problem with Dak's pass too much in that situation. But to me, one of his worst plays of the season was at the end of that San Francisco game where it didn't get intercepted, but it should have been a pick six, right? So I think it's more about the overall decision making. And look, Mike McCarthy, he's played with someone, I swear, you know, growing up watching, like, you know, Aaron Rodgers and watching all those games on TV, you'd see this stat, like there was a stat where he hadn't thrown an interception at home in like 2 years or something like that. It was wild.
Yeah, crazy.
And at the same time, the guy that his predecessor, who Mike McCarthy also coached, throws interceptions out, you know, wherever. So I think Mike McCarthy has kind of seen both ends of the spectrum of a guy who, obviously, Rodgers is also just a different talent, but, and I don't think Dak Prescott is gunslinger Brett Favre. I think Romo was more that way, but still, I think Mike McCarthy has kind of seen both ends of the spectrum, and I think that should help in when he's kind of like, you know, coaching Dak up to be a little bit smarter, a little bit better in those situations.
Yeah, and I don't know, like, so we've talked about this a lot, and you have to go back to their archives and maybe restate opinions or whatever. Like, I understand why the Cowboys did what they did and why Kellen had to go. I think I probably disagree with that, but I also am cool, like, I didn't lose any sleep over it because I understand it's probably going to be better for Kellen, at least, to get out of here. I don't know if it'll be better for the Cowboys. I wonder how much Schottenheimer is going to have. I don't know, John, did you get a chance to talk to him? Or, well, do you think this is going to be, there's a lot of, it's like, oh, it's McCarthy's offense now. But I wonder how much, say, Schottenheimer will have. Do you have any read on that?
Yeah, so we got a chance to talk to him for the first time since he became hired as the offensive coordinator. That was at rookie minicamp. We talked to him after that practice was over. And I would say my biggest takeaways from talking to him is that it really isn't, we're trying to break this all down and just build something new, West Coast offense. It's really to try and build off of what they've had. And he pointed out how there was a lot of good and how he, you know, he's worked with a lot of those offensive coaches that were on the staff last year. And obviously a lot of them are still there. So he has a lot of faith in what they're doing. They're just going to, you know, adjust some things. He obviously is not going to get in those specifics of what they're adjusting, but I don't get the sense that he's going to be the one that's implementing this offense. You know, I mean, that's Mike McCarthy's thing has always been, you know, if you call it, you install it. And he always said that throughout the entire time with Kellen. And so why would he change now? And so he's already been talking about how much more time, you know, it's taken up for him, you know, now being in the meeting rooms with Dak a lot more often, you know, designing and calling things that he thinks will work well. Now, obviously you're adding another piece in there with Brandon Cooks that they didn't have before. So that'll add some different wrinkles. You obviously don't have Dalton Schultz and Ezekiel Elliott. So you subtract that, that's going to add some different wrinkles. There's some moving pieces, obviously, in the offensive line, that's going to add some changes. So it's not like the, you know, high school, hey, this is the offense we run at this school and you got to adapt to it. It's like, they have to adapt to what is going to be best for this particular team. And I just don't know that we're going to know a ton about that until we get to at least Oxnard, because you are talking about a head coach that these last 2 years has been fined significantly because of too much contact during OTAs and minicamp. And so that's rolled itself over to where it is a lot of, you know, jog through, you know, you're not going full speed, things like that. Like the highlight of last week's OTAs was this 40, 45 yard bomb Will Greer threw to Deuce Vaughn, and Deuce Vaughn had to come back and like catch it. And, And I mean, Deuce Vaughn's a little guy, and to see him kind of adjust in the air to like make this catch, it was outstanding. But at the same time, they don't have pads on, and the DB that was by him just kind of put his hand up like you were just kind of going through the, he's not really trying to like intercept the pass or whatever. So it's hard to read too much into that. There's a lot of people that are going to see that because it was something that was widely reported after practice was over and be like, Deuce Vaughn, deep threat. And it's like, maybe he is, but just off seeing that play, I'm not going to determine that. One thing I did want to point out though, because Saad mentioned this on the Brett Favre thing, and I don't think we've ever talked about it. And I think, you know, KT, you're a good person to talk to about this because of, you know, your background of following the Packers. So 2005 was Mike Sherman's last year as coach, and Favre threw 29 interceptions that year. So Mike McCarthy takes over in 2006, and Favre, it goes from 29 down to 18. And then the next year, which was, you know, McCarthy's second year in Green Bay, and it was Favre's last year working with him, those interceptions then went from 18 down to 15. So maybe there's something there. Hey, maybe there's not. You know, same thing with the Schottenheimer thing. You look back, obviously, as we sit here today, one of the most made fun of quarterbacks or players in sports right now, I feel like, is Russell Wilson. And Russell Wilson played some of his best ball when Brian Schottenheimer was calling the offense. So maybe there's something there. Maybe this is going to be even more quarterback friendly. Maybe this leads to Dak having, you know, a career year. It might, but again, I just think that there's a lot we still have to see before we get to week one. The good news is, though, is that you're playing with a defense that is elite and gives you a considerable margin for error because of the fact that they should be able to lock down some teams with all the weapons they have on that side of the ball.
Yeah, it's strange, too, coming off the draft where, you know, it's like their draft was very intentional. It seemed very like, hey, there's some things that we want here. Defensive tackle definitely being one of those. Had a feeling they were going to get a tight end, whether it's who anyone wanted there. I still keep going back to offensive line, and that's my biggest question about the offense moving forward. Can you tell me what they were running out there? I know it kind of doesn't matter at OTAs, but just what were they running out there just so we can cover it?
So Zach Martin didn't participate on the day we were there. He was at the facility. He was in, he just wasn't out participating. There were a few other players that weren't. Trayvon Diggs was one, which obviously when you tweet that out, everyone jumps to the, well, he's just holding out for the contract type thing. DeMarcus Lawrence was another guy that did not participate. I'm trying to think who else, Dante Fowler. And, I believe there was one more, Malik Hooker. So when you don't have a Zach Martin out there, that's obviously going to change some stuff up. And so it was interesting to see that at right guard in his place was Matt Wiletzko. And then at left guard, which is the big question mark spot on the Cowboys offensive line, it was Josh Ball. And so when people see that, you know, they're like, well, where's Chuma Adoga? This is the guy they added in the offseason. He's supposed to be the guy that is going to get a good chance to win that starting left guard job. He did work in with the first team as well at left guard. I think they just wanted to start with some guys that have already been in the, you know, the organization, have been around, kind of want to go in this, the direction that they know is, hey, this is the way we're doing practice. Cause that's really what this OTAs is about, getting everybody on the same page so that when you do get to training camp, there isn't any questions about how they're going to be running practice and doing things, and they can, you know, be very effective and efficient. And so, and as I know some fans don't want to hear, but Tyler Smith was only at left tackle. There was no left guard reps for Tyler Smith. Tyron Smith was only at right tackle, you know? And so that's another one. I know, you know, some Cowboys fans and I understand that believe, hey, your best five is Tyron at left tackle, Tyler Smith at left guard. I can't argue with that. If that's what they end up going with, I do think that could be your best five. But, you know, when the drill started and they went out there and they had their, you know, first five out there, Tyler Smith was at left tackle. Tyron Smith was at right tackle. So read into that however you might. Obviously, the coaches and everybody know that we're going to be reporting on this stuff. So it's nothing, you know, set in stone or anything like that. But I know that that is a position that a lot of people have had their eyes on. So, yeah, that was one takeaway from when everything started.
Now, when the other thing it says, like, I don't really worry too much about guys.
Let me back up.
Yeah.
It was Matt Farniak at left guard. My bad.
Farniak.
Josh Ball was at right guard. Matt Farniak was at left guard. Tyler Smith was at left tackle. Tyron Smith was at right tackle. So it goes Tyler Smith, Matt Farniak, Biadasz, Josh Ball, Tyron Smith. also then working with the first group behind them, Chuma Adoga then came in at left guard, and then Matt Waletzko worked at right tackle. So those were kind of your core seven guys that were out. But again, when Zach Martin comes out there, he's your right guard. So I just look at left guard as they're really trying to just leave it up to a competition, and they really want to keep Tyler Smith at left tackle. So, you know, Terrence Steele was out there like in Jersey and that, but he wasn't actually doing anything. He's still a little bit ways away. Whereas, you know, him and Tony Pollard are the key guys to keep an eye on. Pollard was out there and participating in some walkthrough things.
So like you go through all that, and I'm never one of those guys who really cares about like who's there at OTAs, unless it's like, you know, you want your quarterback to be there. Great. You got new offense, things like that. But like you said, the half speed stuff, I'm like, dude, if Zach Martin needs to miss that, he's going to miss half speed stuff. I don't really care. DeMarcus Lawrence miss that? I don't really care. I am curious about kicker. Man, when Brandon McManus got released from Denver the other day, I was like, hey, there's one. There's someone that we know that we've heard of. I know it's strange that we're doing this again. We're going to go into camp not knowing who the kicker is, aren't we?
No, I think we'll go into camp with two kickers that will, and we'll know that whoever the one is that they sign is probably your favorite. I keep leaning towards Robbie Gold. There's a part of me that also wonders if one of those guys like a Gold or Mason Crosby or one of those veteran type guys like that, if there isn't already something where they've already talked to him, like, hey, you know, whenever you guys are ready, I'm ready to contribute, whatever. I'm a veteran. I don't need to necessarily be there, whatever. I just find it hard to believe that they're going into the season like, no, we're going to go with Tristan Vizcaino, you know, and it is Vizcaino. It's not Vizcaino. So make sure you get that right. It's very important.
Like, I agree with you. That does sound insane to do that, but it does kind of match up with how they've operated a little bit in the past.
I mean,
dude, Garibay, man, come on.
Yeah. I mean, Garibay and then going back to Maher, you know, I mean, we didn't expect that to happen at this time last year. There's no way at this time last year you thought Maher would be their kicker all season long, you know? So I don't know. I don't love it. I would rather know who my kicker is and it'd be someone that you can really count on, you know? And they clearly don't have that right now, but we'll see. Maybe they feel good about Robbie Gold, you know, coming and kicking inside after he spent most of his career outside.
There's such a fine line between the Colts giving Matt Gay a, you know, big 4-year contract or, you know, just going to camp with like guys that we don't know much about. And I would just like to get in the middle of that because I don't think you need to be giving out long contracts. Don't get me wrong. I'm not telling you kickers were going to spend a bunch of money. My God, when the McManus release happened, I was like, hey, we have him. I didn't even think about Mason Crosby. It's interesting. Everything from 50 plus is going to be, which he's been good at, but it's like, you were getting to the point where how much strength is left in that leg, and maybe the same with Robbie Gould there as well. Man, and the new kickoff rule is interesting. I mean, how will that affect Kevontae Turpin? You need a guy who can get it, you know, to the back of the end zone, and let's just, you know, get touchbacks and not have to worry about covering. We've seen the Cowboys have some explosive plays that have helped, you know, flip the field and change games. You, to use that as to your advantage.
You think Turpin will be on the team next year?
As in the 2023 season?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do. One more year.
You think he'll make it through camp?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, they would. I mean, I can see them giving some opportunities to Deuce Vaughn to return some stuff, but I don't think that they would go all the way over to that level yet. I think as long as Turpin keeps doing everything the right way and continues to show the kind of juice that he showed last year in training camp and in preseason, then I just think that they'll look at him as kind of a weapon where, yeah, these new kickoff rules are certainly,
I hate it.
Yeah.
I hate
eliminating that. Now he did tell the Cowboys website that he told Patrick Walker at DallasCowboys.com that he's returning. He's not fair catching anything. And while that sounds aggressive and fun and everything like that, that also sounds like the recipe for some, maybe starting some drives off at the 6, and you really don't want that either. So,
We had that last year.
Yeah, like, I don't really love that.
I think everyone remembers the preseason Kevontae Turpin. They remember some good things. Maybe they remember him taking kind of a bad angle in the 49ers game.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the back half of the season. No, let's not spend a lot of time on it. But the back half of the season, there were a lot of questionable punt return decisions. that put the team in a little bit of a bind. And, you know, those are little things like that that are easy to forget. And, you know, it was his first year doing it. We can hope that he gets better, but there's a little bit of concern there, I would say.
Yeah.
It's just me. But let's get serious here.
Yeah, I have a little bit more concern on the running back situation and then how you're going to implement Deuce Vaughn or Kevontae Turpin and these guys into the offense more than I'm that concerned about the special teams. You know, that's what I want to see. Like, how are you going to get these other weapons involved? Because you got a lot of question marks in on your offense, whether it's your running backs behind Tony Pollard or it's your wide receivers behind your starting three. There's just a lot that you really don't know for sure what you have there. So that stuff is a little bit more. And then obviously the offensive line, specifically at left guard, that stuff is all above for me concern or interest than whatever, anything on special teams, kicker included.
Ronald Jones, Malik Davis, what are we thinking there?
Malik Davis took the, so Tony Pollard was out there taking the reps with the ones. And then after that, it was Malik Davis was going first with Ronald Jones behind him and then Deuce Vaughn. That was kind of the order they were going in. But, I mean, I could see all four of those guys being on the roster, but I don't know, man. I understand that a lot of people want to move on from Zeke, and I do believe that that was the right decision. But I just don't look at their running back room and say, oh, yeah, no, they're good now. Everything's fine. They got everything they need.
Well, they're going to wear Tony out. Like, they're going to just use him up. Now, are we talking 100% by the time the season starts, or are we talking 100% by the time training camp starts?
I mean, to see him out there already, I would think he's going to be pretty close to full go to start training camp. But again, he's not a guy that's going to do anything in the preseason. My only thing about them, you know, giving him a lot more is then what Tony Pollard are you getting in January? I mean, this isn't like some rebuild here. Like, you're totally everything about this season, everything about March, you know, trading for Cooks, trading for Gilmore. It's to try and make a run this year. Do you really care about, well, we got to get Tony Pollard 25 carries in the Eagles game this year? No, you'd like Tony Pollard to be able to get 25 carries in January in like the divisional round game. So that's my, so that's where I'm kind of like, yeah, I mean, I think he can handle a bigger workload, but how much is that bigger workload going to factor in later in the year? You're trying to get him a rushing title, like trying to get a little something to put up on his mantle. That's cool and all, but I thought that the whole goal was to win the whole thing. And to me, having Tony Pollard is close to 100%, that's why they had the split in carries with Zeke during the regular season last year. That made sense to me. I mean, you know, they might have beat the 49ers if he doesn't get hurt in that game. So I don't know, man.
Zeke's still available.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not necessarily saying that you got to go back and go get Zeke. I don't think that's going to happen, but I would think that you should try and get another veteran, like physical runner that can wear some of that load. You know, I mean, maybe that's Ronald Jones. Maybe it's Malik Davis. Maybe they hold up and everything's great. And we'll look back at this and be like, why would we ever even question it? But I have questions right now.
I do feel like Ronald Jones, you know, can fill that role though. When he played in Tampa, sometimes the way that he would run the ball made me feel like I was watching like LeGarrette Blount, you know, cause LeGarrette Blount was in Tampa before. It had some similar vibe to that. Like, I don't know how much wear and tear, you know, his body can take or what, but or how much the Cowboys are even going to have that as part of their offense. But whatever it is, I feel like Ronald Jones is capable of at least doing a spot duty of that. To me, it's more about how much in the offense are you really going to, you know, kind of split that. Like going back to, you know, college USC days, if you're looking at Reggie Bush and Lendale White and like, you know, the split of the workload and roles and things like that, that's a lot different than, you know, even come back to like the NFL, like Jonathan Stewart and D'Angelo Williams. Like there were different guys that had more of a 50-50 load versus like, hey, you're just going to come in for these situations and do that. And I think depending on how the Cowboys offense operates, I think that brings a different element to it.
Yeah, the red zone is going to be real interesting to me because
that
looks like a good spot where, you know, you know that, hey, Zeke, Dalton Schultz, guys like that are going to get some touches there. They've been around Dak. They've been around the offense. You know what they can do. Now this year, like, you know, week one, they get in the red zone. You know, Jake Ferguson, Hendershot, Schoonmaker, you know, what's going to be the go-to thing there? Is it handing to Tony Pollard on the goal line? Is that going to work? Are they bringing in a fullback? You know, like, there's just a lot more questions in that area of the game. And maybe that's a good thing. You know, maybe that throws off some of the trends that some of the teams like, in the division are used to seeing from the Cowboys. You don't know what to expect as much now. Maybe that helps out. I don't know, but there are certainly some question marks there. And I look at their offense and it wasn't like it was a bad one these last couple of years, you know? So I don't know. Yeah. We will see.
I would like to believe that we lived in a world where egos were put aside and personal relationships and emotions were put aside for the sake of business. And if they truly felt that Zeke was an upgrade over Malik Davis and Ronald Jones, that Zeke could be here and not have any problem with getting legitimately 3 or 4 carries a game. And it makes everyone happy and he's back in the locker room and we're good, but there's no need. And it's just not possible. It's just not possible. That's not a realistic view of the world. And also I don't know that Zeke's better than Ronald Jones or Malik Davis, by the way. I'm just saying, if there's been a lot of talk, I saw in your story, John, like McCarthy's talking about, look how Zeke popped off the tape on goal line tape that they watched. It's like, okay, cool. You know, a lot of running backs jump off the tape on goal line tape, right? I mean, so it's like strange. Like we're still like these fond words and there he's out there without a job. And I'm like, I'd like to feel like he could be here, but it's just not. Just not practical and none of the way it's going to be.
Wasn't there a coach or somebody that told Zeke, if you want to play, you're going to have to play for the minimum?
I didn't see that.
Yeah, I didn't see
but
that.
That's I thought I saw that, true. That out there somewhere that said, like, if he wants to play, he's going to have to play for the minimum because that's just what the price is for what he brings.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people feel that way. Well, obviously, him and his agents and that don't feel that way. But, yeah, I mean... Clearly, if there was a big market for him, he'd be signed already. So, no, that wouldn't surprise me. But I just don't see him taking that minimum if he ends up playing for that with the Dallas Cowboys. I just think it would like sign him another team.
I'd like to see him pop on with someone, maybe someone that's on the schedule.
Yeah.
You know, that'd be fun. But the Chargers and the Bucks were kind of two teams that kind of made sense. And I'm just not sure that I can even, like, off the top of my head, just come up with a team that's like, oh, this makes sense.
And, I mean, hey.
This would be the one.
I mean, I don't think this is – the most likely path, but who's to rule out one of those things where he doesn't play for a team during training camp and even at the start of the season and kind of plays it out until like one of these top teams has a running back go down or they really need, that's the missing piece is in the running game. And then he joins like, I don't know, like the Bengals or the Bills or something like that. And he ends up being like a really, you know what he ends up being? He ends up being Leonard Fournette for that Bucks team that won the Super Bowl where you're just like, whoa.
Yeah.
Okay. Playoff Lenny, you know? So I don't know.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So I obviously we're what 3 weeks? I mean, 3 weeks past the schedule coming out. A couple things that might have caught your eye, John. Something that kind of really maybe you're kind of circling and kind of looking forward to.
I'm not looking forward to Buffalo. I can tell you that. And it was funny.
That's
I asked Stephen Jones.
Great.
I asked Stephen Jones about when the schedule came out. What was like the first like group of games or games? Instead, he goes, "Oh no, that Buffalo game for sure." And I mean, no one's looking forward to going there. At the end of the season. So that was
you get Miami the next week, though. It's a trade-off.
It is a trade-off, but that is also Christmas Eve. So little bit of traveling there for the players around the holidays. So, I don't know, that whole little stretch right there is probably the thing that stood out to me most, because it's late in the season, and in there you got four, you know, pretty good teams right there that you're going to be playing all in a row, with Detroit, the Dolphins, the Bills, and I believe the Eagles started off. Am I right on that?
The Eagles do start it off. Yeah.
Yeah. December 10th. That's a tough stretch right there.
The week 18 game is in Washington.
Yeah.
Which is technically January. Yeah. That December stretch is tough. You know,
and then, yeah, and then you end with that Washington game where, yes, normally you look at that like, oh, yeah, well, they can take care of business there. But then you look at last year when they ended the season at Washington and played one of the worst games I've ever seen the Cowboys play. So,
yeah, Washington's weird. I have a hard time getting my head around them being any good. But,
yeah,
you know, it's if they're serious about trying to run Sam Howell out there, that's cool. Have fun, man. If they're going to run Jacoby Brissett out there, I mean, that's cool. But it's not like there's a lot of, you know, quarterbacks just kind of sitting there going, hey, pick me. It's all kind of happened. But there are, you know, two Washington games on the back half of the season. And Washington, I would say, is probably your favorite to be last place in the division, clearly. So,
yeah, for sure.
That's helpful. We'll see what kind of jump the Panthers make. Hard to see them. I mean, they were competitive last year to an extent, but hard to see that. So you got them on the back end as well to kind of even things out. For me, it's the stretch that I really love the most right here is, let's see, it's week one, two, it's week five and six, where you have at San Francisco on Sunday night, and then the game maybe I'm looking forward to the most, it's Mike McCarthy Monday night taking on Kellen Moore. Cowboys and Chargers, and it's weird for it to be a different conference, Monday night football. And honestly, whoever scores the most points, they were right. That is the more
the better offense. Champion.
Yeah, better offense. That, and we'll know all this debate and discourse in the offseason, we will know based on what happens in that one game, because that's how sports works.
I'll tell you who's really looking forward to that Chargers game. That's the Dallas Cowboys social media team. I don't know if you saw the schedule release that the Chargers put out, but when they did the Cowboys, they basically did like a cartoon of like a bus running over like Dak, like from the way the season ended. And then the tweet headline that they put on their story about, you know, Dak giving the game away type thing, which from everything I've heard didn't really sit well with the number four camp and others involved in the organization. So to see the Chargers bring that back up, I don't think the Cowboys were thrilled about that.
Well, I'll say, and I love my friends over at DallasCowboys.com, like we all do, I ain't messing with the Chargers social media team. That is a group of people who I would
That's
not
a super team.
Mess around with. They keep it real. And yeah. I'm just like, you know what? I applaud you. Good luck in the AFC West. You know, like I am not like you. I'm choosing my battles. Dude, me and the Broncos social media team, we can have at it all day. I am not going after the Chargers social media team. I feel like they got dirt on everybody. They're ready. They're so good.
Their implementation and skill is so good. I feel like they hold the banner of all the schedule. Yeah,
there are certain teams, and I used to work at Cowboys.com, by the way, so just full disclosure there, that can get away with that stuff. But our attitude with the Cowboys social was always like, the Cowboys might have all those ideas in the world, but like the brand is that's not the brand.
Yeah. Like, and it's also
ribbing other teams.
Right. And it's also a thing where, like, you know, for example, the Stars, their social media team always ribs the other team after every single time they win. But going back to the Cowboys, not every single, and I know we're talking social media, but, you know, as Kent mentioned, he was at .com overall. You look at .com overall, I think the Cowboys, John and I have talked about this before. I don't know that this holds true anymore to where you have a lot of guys being super critical and stuff necessarily all the time. But back in the Hellman and Rob Phillips and you know, those days, like DallasCowboys.com was, you know, they had full leash, whatever they wanted to do. And a lot of teams around the league don't have that sort of freedom where you can really be like, you know, say whatever you want, as long as it's like, you know, not, you know, whatever. It's not completely out of bounds. But yeah, I think there's different flavors for every team, and that's just what the Chargers do.
The Cowboys reporters, to their credit, Nick and all those guys over there, Hellman and Rob, while they were there, they covered the team like John would cover them, like Clarence would cover them. You know, I mean, they don't hold back on a lot of
stuff. As much as they possibly could. Yeah, I think there were little things.
The eyes are so much greater on them in the playoffs, and they tweet something like that. Like, they tweeted stories out all the time during the season about Dak could have been better in this game, and he wasn't, you know, that kind of stuff.
I will say this, though. If you read that story, that story isn't as aggressive as that headline is. You know, this is the business I'm in, believe me. Any of these players that want to come at me and be like, you've never played the game, tip my cap. What we're talking about right now, that's John Machota's game. And I'll tell you this right now. You read that story, it does not match up with a headline that you tweet out that says, Dak Prescott gave away the ball twice in the narrow loss to the 49ers in a matchup the Cowboys had a chance to win if they didn't, again, generate self-inflicted wounds. I mean, from a team account, that is pretty aggressive. And I like it. I'm not against, I mean, heck, I think it's great that they do that. I'm just saying that I understand where you're coming from, Kent, when you say, like, yeah, they hold themselves, that, like, they have to hold themselves in a higher standard. First of all, they have so many more followers than all the others, but they also do send out things like that where, let's be honest, if they never even deleted that either, you know, I mean, that's still up
right,
there.
Right, because that's been, I'll defend them, like, that's, they've been like that for years.
Yeah,
like,
it's great.
Literally since Jerry started the website, he said, say exactly what the talk radio in Dallas says about me on the website.
Right.
He's like, because we're competing with them. If y'all aren't going to say it, they will, you know? So that was always the attitude. And I don't blame them for not deleting it, because they probably approved it with multiple people in the organization before it went out. So
you mean more along the lines of, like, taking shots at other teams?
I mean more along the lines of, like, we would come up with crazy ideas for videos.
Yeah.
Oh, what if we did this? I remember when the Browns had that, like, Jeepo DeWound thing go wrong. Remember? Where they, like, their fans had this sign that was supposed to say dog pound, but it was
honestly
backwards.
Honestly, didn't remember that they had a team. Sorry, what?
And I remember we had a,
like,
big,
when Bernie Kosar was there?
This was in 2016.
Oh, okay. My bad.
I think it was that year we went to Cleveland. I just remember we were thinking, like, oh, what can we do if we win? And we were going to, you know, do something about the Jeepo DeWound. Like, got out of the Jeepo DeWound unscathed instead of the dog pound, you know? And we didn't want to, like, make fun of them, you know?
Yeah.
It was just one of those things. And that's just kind of the attitude of the social media is, like, it's more like a news organization and, you know, kind of like the Dallas Morning News would operate than like a social media person would operate, if that makes sense.
Right.
Let me also put it to you this way on the Dak thing too. I've had people that work for other sports organizations that might not have the Cowboys, let's say, fan base, but they have some pretty big fan bases. And when I've talked to those people within the last few months, without even bringing it up, they have brought that up to me about that tweet that went out. They're like, man, can you believe the team's website wrote that thing about Dak, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, man, that's the way. They're not like the other, like, websites. Like, they'll sit there and they'll be aggressive against this stuff like that. So it's not like this is just like a local thing that it was a big deal or anything. Like, there was a lot of people. There were a lot of people that really opened their eyes. They're like, wow, I can't believe they did that.
Remember Rob Phillips had left Cowboys.com for a few years and came back in like 2014 or something like that. 15 maybe. It was right after DeMarco Murray left. And like Rob's first story on Cowboys.com, it was a point counterpoint. Hellman's point was they should not pursue Adrian Peterson.
Oh, I remember this. Yeah.
And Rob's was they should pursue Adrian Peterson. And they had two columns on the website on here's why they shouldn't. The aggregation on Rob saying they should go pursue Adrian Peterson was like insane. It was headlining Sports Center. It was like nuts. It was like tampering. Is this tampering? He was so effing nervous. Like his first column back was like, oh my God. Like,
and I think
shaking the storm up already.
And it I was, think that was there was Pro Football Talk or somebody that, you know, stepped in there and threw some gas on that fire, much like with the Dak tweet thing too.
Yes.
And that takes it to another level, because then they write it from a perspective of, well, this is a team website. Aren't they supposed to be whatever? And raise that whole tampering thing. I remember when that happened, because it really raised everyone's eyes to, like, on a team website, like, you really can't talk about a player that's on another team because it can be looked at as if it's tampering. Yeah. But the Cowboys website is not trying to be like, you know, your typical team website. And so because of that, if they beat the Chargers, I think they're going to come at the Chargers pretty strong on their social media site. I got a feeling on this.
Dan, the Chargers, they just own that schedule release, man. That's like
really
crazy.
I
loved it.
I would say that.
Do
that,
it again.
I would
do
say
the
that
AMA again next year.
I would say that $5 video it took to film for the Tennessee Titans.
Oh, that was
won the day for me.
Titans was good too. The Titans one was probably top three for sure. I don't know that another one really jumps out at me. And I watched pretty much all of them, and God, there were some bad ones.
Did you like the Yellowstone Cowboys one?
I think they missed the boat by like a year on Yellowstone, because Yellowstone, a lot of people had soured on it. They realized once the show kind of gets to season five, if you're not really reinventing yourselves over and over and over, and then the spinoffs, oversaturated the Yellowstone market. So when you're making Yellowstone 1921 and Yellowstone 1883 and Yellowstone 1714, people are like, that's a lot. That's what kind of what's happened a little bit with Star Wars. Like, Star Wars people will still like love it and be into it, but the mass appeal goes away because it's all too much at once.
So you wanted them to do to do Succession.
That would have been
Jones
timely.
Family.
Perfect. Or
Jerry, Charlotte, Jerry Jr.
That might have crossed some lines, though.
Both are perfect. Like Succession is the Jones family, even though it's not about them, but it is.
I can't watch the show without thinking of the Jones family.
I
every
can't
time I'm watching Shiv, I'm like thinking of Charlotte. You know, I'm like,
me too.
This is crazy.
Me too. And you know what's wild? Well, spoilers and all that, so I don't want to ruin anything.
Yeah, let's not do that.
Don't spoil it.
It's still kind of new out there.
It is wild how it ends. You got to use your imagination.
Yeah.
Yes.
We'll talk off the air. But they could have done Barry, too, on HBO, just made it Jerry.
I think it all comes to that they had a connection with the guy at Yellowstone, so that's why, you know, just like, you know, there's a reason that they had Post Malone. There's a connection there. You know, they didn't get.
I want to see, you know how they had Post Malone doing beer pong? I want to see Jerry hanging out with Willie Nelson in his tour bus smoking some doobies.
God, that'd be so rad.
Okay.
That'd be Jerry, Snoop Dogg, and Willie Nelson getting lit. And Don Nelson.
The Cowboys website, though, sets the bar pretty high with all that stuff. So you're a lot more critical. Like, you're expecting it to be really good. Where, like, no one's expecting much out of Tennessee, whether you're talking about the team on the field or the social media side of it. So when they do something so simple like that, and it's just so like perfect because it's so relatable. And I don't know. That was my favorite one.
Yeah, no, they were taking advantage of like Bachelorette weekend and all that stuff in Nashville too, which is really good.
Actually, my favorite part about it is something that we never even got to see. And it was the idea of like thinking, like, it's not like they went up to like eight people, boom, 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 got what they needed and left. There were obviously a lot of people they talked to that knew stuff, and they had to be like, stop asking questions. They know this. We're not using this. Next person, you know.
Yeah,
like,
they probably stood out there for 2 hours. Total,
absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
And that's it. And then edited it in 25 minutes.
It was great.
Dang it. This person knows their logos. Move on. Yeah.
Move on. Next person.
I like to on that, and I'm sorry to do this, but David Bakhtiari of the Packers was like calling out the Packers schedule release video for how bad it was. I was like, that's awesome. Get the players. And they're like, hey, man, we lost my buddy, the quarterback. You traded him. And also, do better.
Shout out to friend of the show, Ed Cahill, over at the Falcons organization for changing their – didn't they change their social media team name to like the – what was it?
I forgot whatever the Titans fan called their
whatever
team.
Whatever, the Chickens or something. I don't remember what it was. But, yeah, they jumped on that immediately and – that was very self-aware. And so shout out to an organization who can admit when another team's social content is good.
Oh, the Red Stallions.
Red Stallions.
They call the Red Stallions.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild.
It is interesting how many people think that the Colts logo is the Cowboys, though.
Well, yeah. And it, It is. It's simple, right? Same color scheme and same, country type graphic.
Yeah.
I mean, the horseshoe is way more country than the star.
Yeah. A star would never equate to a cowboy. If you didn't know the NFL, you would think they were the Stars or the Patriots, right?
Yeah.
We should probably do that with just the other teams, you know, just here in Dallas. Like, pretty easy to do. Throw the logos up, just see what people think. Oh, in other sports.
You were talking about kickoffs earlier and the rule change and all that. I want an NFL without kickoffs. I'm tired of it. And the way you have to build a team to like have a guy that can do this is also something. They need to have a rule change where we start the game without a kickoff. I don't know what that looks like.
Well, then that's a slippery slope, because if you're okay, what position are you talking about when you're saying you have to have a guy that can do this?
A kickoff specialist.
As in the returner?
No, a kicker.
Okay. And all of which are more part of the football game than a long snapper. And in 2023, we still have to have a long snapper.
Well, I want to keep the punting in.
Come on now.
I think punting should
Oh, you want to keep the punting in. I'm sorry, you take away kickoffs. It's a slippery slope to like taking it all away to where it's just like there's no kicking involved. And then now we're all sitting there looking and going, why is this sport called football at all?
Here's what, to me, the most exciting play in football
is the touchdown. Right.
Tension wise is a fourth and short.
Okay.
Start the game on a fourth and short, whoever wins the toss. They can punt. They can run a play. If they run a play and make the first down, they keep possession. Or they can punt, try and pin the guy deep.
Look, the only reason I don't completely dismiss what you're saying, Kent, is because I get where you're coming from, but like we're all old enough to remember the Devin Hester days and you know all that stuff. And for me, that was a lot of fun. Now, because of the change in the yardage, and I understand player safety and all that stuff that goes into it, I get it. But I'm just saying, like, my initial thought is to cringe when you say that, because I loved that whole part of, you know, I remember Randall Cobb. What was it like? First year for his, when he was a rookie, right? The 108 yard return, like first game, I think, or something like that. That's kind of how that's how Victor Cruz broke in the preseason. Like these kind of things, like, you know, I have a soft spot for all that. But
what about the DeMar Hamlin game? The first game in Buffalo after DeMar Hamlin.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't it kickoff?
Yeah, I want to bring that up.
Why?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I understand the player safety thing now.
I know. I'm not talking about player safety. I mean, I'm not talking about DeMar Hamlin getting hurt. I'm saying about the first game after they came back.
Yeah.
That was like a huge moment in Buffalo.
Oh, like they I thought you were talking about the play that he got hurt.
And he didn't get hurt on a kickoff anyway.
My
whole thing on all of it, though, is just this. Why does anything need to be fixed? Business is booming. How about you just keep doing what you're doing? Seems like everything's great right now. There's no reason to fix the chocolate chip cookie. It's great. Just keep rolling with it. Like, you don't need to get new fans and, oh, well, we got to change for this. I get trying to make stuff safer and the safety of the players and stuff. And so if you want to take this out and take certain things out, I get that. If you're sitting there, you're meeting with doctors, you're meeting with experts of the game, and you're trying to make it safer, that's fine. But to just change things, like all of a sudden, like, hey, let's just throw in that, you know what? They can, instead of going for two, you can go for an additional seven, but you start at the 25. Like, I just don't think like this, they don't need to change anything. It is, as long as they can get it right on the safety end, the product on the field is booming.
I agree. Yeah. The one thing that I would disagree with that has gotten worse over the years, and it's for safety reasons, is the onside kick. The onside kick should be doable. It should be possible for you to get it. And the percentages have gone down to where it's not even interesting anymore. So that's where I will work with Kent. And without making it feel too XFL-ish, I do kind of like the idea of the fourth and whatever play for possession of the ball. You know, I kind of like that. And that's pretty extreme. And I'm with you, John.
There's going to be a ton of fans that are on the same page as you, but there's going to be a ton of fans on the side over here with me that say, well, all game to try and win that game. You don't need a gimmicky little like kick at the end to try and steal it like that. That is just, I'm fine. Yeah. If the onside kicks don't work, then just don't do them. You have the rest of the game to try and win that game. And if it means that, hey, it's not as super as exciting during the last minute of these games, or you're trying to steal one, then hey, so be it. I'm telling you, the product is still going to be great. I mean, like you said, the onside kicks are already out of it now. And like, there's nothing about last season where I was just like, this NFL season would have been so much better if there were more onside kicks. It was like, it was pretty awesome.
Also, like, I also do think that the kickoff element of the game does bring a lot of strategy. Like, it does bring, like, different things at different parts of the game. Like, yeah, I think 90% of the time we're just watching these guys, you know, boom it out of the end zone. But there's pooch kicks. There's watermelon kicks. There's all kinds of stuff that goes on
I agree to a certain extent. But how many memorable plays occur on a kickoff a year in the NFL?
Not that many anymore.
Probably two.
Yeah, not anymore. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, but they've
That's
also,
what I'm saying.
You know,
I'm a little biased. Like,
this all boils down to me trying to get Kai back here, you know? I can't do kickoffs. That's the thing keeping him away.
I may be better than what we have now, probably.
Yeah. I don't know.
Sorry, Tristan.
It is interesting, but
it just felt in the past 5 years or so, it feels more ceremonial than anything, the opening kickoff.
They've changed. You know, it's okay though. If you think about it, just look forward to the crowd getting loud in the seconds after the touchback. The team runs down, they holler at the fans in the end zone, and the crowd starts making a little noise as the offense runs on the field. Just enjoy that aspect of it. The NFL has done a good job of eliminating the TV commercial, the touchdown commercial, kickoff commercial.
Yeah.
It took them a long time to get there. And I think it was like 2016 or 2017. They kind of inserted those rules to where, unless you are up against it in terms of the spots you have to play in that quarter, they're not doing the touchdown commercial, kickoff commercial bit, which is terrible. So yeah, they've done a good job.
Yeah, and I also, like, the other thing is that I think, one, if it, like, you know, Kent, you're absolutely
just
right.
A hypothetical,
It's not a lot, but also then when those moments do come, like, what was it, last season or two seasons ago, the Falcons got, like, two onside kicks in a row or something like that at the end of a game. It was something crazy. Yeah, it was a shocker. But so when it happens, it's really cool. To Kent's, to play, like, I would like to keep it, but to play Kent's side, I think the NFL wants to make every moment as captivating as possible. I think that's why the extra point went from the 2 yard line to the back, because once it became too automatic, they're like, oh, this is kind of boring. Like, you know, we don't want to do this. So I don't think it'll ever change to where it's going to eliminate kickoffs, but I could see within the realm of kickoffs something changing, but I don't know what.
And why do you need to recover an onside kick anyway? What you do is you just take the regular kickoff. And then, yeah, you only have one play left. But what you do is you put, let's say, your running back at center, and then you just have him snap at your quarterback, and then he just gets smoked and the game's over.
It's like 90% of teams, like if the game starts out, whoever wins the toss gets it 4th and 3 at the 20. 90% of teams would just punt, which would be a kickoff, right?
I just don't want to get to any level to where the previous 3.5 quarters really don't matter, because it just gets crazy wild west for the last 5 minutes. I just don't want that. And I like that everything
I can see it going that way too.
And so I'm saying it's a slippery slope. If you all of a sudden allow that, then all of a sudden it just gets down to where, okay, now the clock's stopping too on every first down, and it's like college, and it's just like, yeah, but these end of these games are so, yeah, that's great. The end of the games are so exciting. And guess what now happens? Nobody cares to watch the first 3 quarters because they don't matter, because it's almost like the NBA where, like, now just tune in late and I'll get what I need out of that. Like, you need it so that all the entire game matters. And I think that's what's great. One of the things that's great about the NFL.
Yeah.
Business is booming.
It's even like in college football, there's, you know, especially living down here in Big 12 country. And then, you know, obviously Pac-12 is known for this too, but, like, you know, a team that scores 3 touchdowns in the first quarter is like, it's not over. This isn't over.
We're just getting started.
This game's going to end in the 50s. Like, I don't also want it getting to that level either, you know?
Yeah. And by the way, on a tangent, but related to the topic, this is why I think Devin Hester should be in the Hall of Fame. I think he's a Hall of Famer because he like there's an era and a time that he defines that's never going to be done again. And not that it didn't happen before him. So I'm not saying he's the only one, but he's the last one. It's never happening again.
I think he's close, though. I mean, I feel like there's more and more. There's like a lot of more momentum with him that. Yeah. So maybe he won't get in in the next, you know, couple of years or something, but he's eventually going to be in the Hall of Fame. I just feel like there's too many people pushing for him. People that, you know, really know football, you know, former players and things like that. I think that's going to happen eventually.
Yeah.
Let's close with 60 seconds on DeAndre Hopkins. Released by the Cardinals. Doesn't feel like a great fit, although there has been rumors. Before the Brandon Cooks thing, I guess it felt like it might be something you would consider. But now with Brandon Cooks here, it seems like something they probably wouldn't go down that route. But it is interesting that he's just kind of sitting there available. Obviously, he's not what he once was, but this really reeks of a guy who's going to end up playing for the Chiefs to me.
Yeah, that to me is the best fit. If I'm DeAndre Hopkins, that's absolutely what I do. But then again, I don't know what kind of money they're offering. And that's why I think the Cowboys would be out, because I don't think the Cowboys are going to offer very much money. But yeah, Chiefs makes a lot of sense. Bills, obviously, too. Yeah, I get all that. I mean, if I'm a wide receiver, especially one that's played in the league for a while, I'm trying to get paired up at the back end of my career with a really good quarterback, help make my job easier. But what I was going to say on that, so on a recent radio interview, I was asked about, do you think the Cowboys have buyer's remorse by making the trade for Cooks if they knew that this could have been a possibility? And so my thought on that was just, there's no way you could do that, because where they were at wide receiver when the season ended, there's no way that they could have waited until after free agency, after the draft, and then now to then, you know, get a DeAndre Hopkins. Like, it was such a need that it had to be addressed by March. And also, even if it wasn't, I think you'd have to address it pretty early in the draft. So I don't think there should be any buyer's remorse there. But if they didn't get Brandon Cooks, and let's say, you know, DeAndre Hopkins was released at that time, yeah, I mean, by all means, I mean, DeAndre Hopkins, when he's at his best, I mean, he plays that position as about as well as anybody has ever played it. So I get wanting him. I just don't see at this point why the Cowboys would do that. A key piece in this here is that, you know, talking to Michael Gallup and the coaching staff, you know, they feel really good about him having a bounce back year after he was coming off the ACL last year. And he feels a lot better, feels a lot closer to what he was before the injury. If they didn't have a lot of trust that Gallup will be closer to what he was before, and then they didn't trade for Brandon Cooks, it becomes a bigger issue. But I think because they feel good about those two, that's why they probably won't go the Hopkins route. And also, I just think he's gonna want too much money. And I do think the Cowboys need to keep a little bit of money available under the cap to possibly, like I said, go after a running back. I mean, you might not love this wide receiver core, but I can tell you this right now, you're not going to love this offensive line if they don't find any answers at left guard. So I want some wiggle room there, because I just think those are bigger issues right now than wide receiver.
Yeah, and also, I mean, on the buyer's remorse thing, I mean, they gave him a fifth and a sixth for Brandon Cooks. Like, I mean, like, you know, it's not like they gave up
some of the salary.
Yeah, it's not like they paid like a first round pick and now Hopkins could have been had for free. I mean, they kind of got Cooks for free, and you know, kind of like, you know, in some sense. So I don't really think there would be buyer's remorse if I was the Cowboys, for all those reasons as well.
And the numbers on Hopkins are going to be interesting, when, you know, whatever he ends up getting from someone else. I just don't think that he's willing to take as little as the Cowboys would be willing to offer. And not only, and when I say little, I don't mean just like on a yearly salary. I mean, on like the number of years. I could see the Cowboys just wanting to do like a 1 year deal. And at where he's at in his career, I think he's 30, going to be 31. I think he's going to want more than a year. So I don't know. Maybe the Chiefs aren't willing to pay a lot either. I don't know. We'll see. But I just don't think the Cowboys, nothing about the way the Cowboys operates makes me think that they're going to be willing to get in some big war.
Absolutely. Well, guys, good to be back. Saad, thank you for your coverage on the Stars all year long. John still gets some pieces up, including 10 players to look forward to for the Cowboys this summer, right? That's let me frame your article correctly while I'm here. Enough. 10 Cowboys players who must play well in 2023. Some good Cowboys content there from John. His OTA recap piece is really good as well. Check that out. Also, just you know, keep it on The Athletic for all the cool stuff that we're doing here, as we always do. For our producer, Kent Garrison, for Saad Youssef, for Father John Machota, I am Kevin Turner, and we will see you next time on About Them Cowboys.
Told him I got a birthday coming up here real quick. I don't have time to have a bad time. It ain't on my schedule.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.